Welcome to the Sacred Feminine Power Podcast, where we explore the many facets of feminine power and why it is so important for women and for men to step into this power in our world at this time. This is Emmy from Feminine Revered, and my beautiful guest for today is Karen Tate. Karen is a thought leader, speaker, 7 times published author, and activist, and her work is at the crossroads of spirituality, personal transformation, and social justice. She's hostess of the long-running Voices of the Sacred Feminine podcast, considered a treasure trove of wisdom for more than a dozen years. A caring economy conversation leader and power of partnership presenter with the Center for Partnership Studies, Karen also earned certification from Smith College in the psychology of political activism, Women Changing the World. Named one of the 13 most influential women in goddess spirituality and a wisdom keeper of the women's spirituality movement, her body of work over the years, along with reviews of her books from students, peers, and colleagues, speak to her extensive leadership, knowledge, and expertise. Wow. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, it's such a blessing to have you with us. I feel truly honored, and I am super excited to be learning from you today as well. Now, Now, since my podcast is called Sacred Feminine Power, I love to start by asking my guests, what does Sacred Feminine Power mean to you personally?
Well, it's everything, really, when you think about it. And I realized that because, to begin with, I didn't grow up learning about sacred feminine power. I grew up in the Bible Belt of New Orleans. That's in the southern part of the United States. And, you know, they didn't teach us about sacred feminine power there, you know, on a spiritual level or even non-spiritual. You know, it was more of an environment where, you know, women were taught to obey male authority, whether that authority was in your household or your boss or the guy in the pulpit, you know. And and I realized later, when I did discover the feminine face of God, the sacred feminine, that it shifts your whole psyche when you grow up with the sacred feminine. You know, you have a different sense of self, different sense of self-esteem when you discover that the sacred feminine, you know, is in your image as a woman as well. And I think psychologically, it opens us up to expand and grow and transform, you know, be our authentic self and achieve things we might not otherwise have achieved.
Yes, absolutely. I love everything that you shared there. And it's so very true that when we grow up without having really no role models or nothing to compare ourselves to in terms of the sacred feminine, it really does shape our psyche and it gets us to think of ourselves in very specific and often very narrow ways. So thank you for sharing that. That's an important point to keep in mind. Now, Karen, I would love to hear from you about a challenge that you have faced on your path that's really helped you to activate the sacred feminine power within you.
Well, you know, when I first discovered the sacred feminine, it was about discovering all her many faces across continents and cultures around the world. It was a awakening to how widespread the sacred feminine actually was and is once you get outside the United States. And I started to travel to a lot of these sacred places, and it meant a lot to me to actually stand in these sites where a feminine face of God had actually been revered. So at first it started like that, you know, just a raised awareness of her presence in herstory, if you will. But then as my relationship with the idea of the sacred feminine developed, I also started to realize it goes beyond spirituality. It goes beyond history. The sacred feminine is such a psychological role model for women, and even maybe even more important now. It's those feminine values, those ideals that we need so desperately in the world. I started to see the sacred feminine as really a big umbrella of these ideas and values that can help us manifest a new normal in the world. And so with these added pieces of the puzzle, I started to realize how, for instance, you know, the lion-headed Egyptian goddess Sekhmet, who's one of my favorites, you know, she's such a role model for women to say no without guilt or shame, to set healthy boundaries so they're not misused and abused. And I think that's so important as we go through life today in predator capitalism and patriarchy, you know, where women are diminished still even today, you know, that we have this to fall back on to help us blaze that path forward and not succumb to the evils, really, I think, of predator capitalism and patriarchy that really doesn't have our best interests at heart.
No, they certainly don't. And I think it's becoming more and more evident and more rising to the surface just how harmful they are, not just to women, whose oppression is kind of indicated within the systems and structures of these paradigms, but also to men, our collective as humanity, and how deeply it has affected our psyche as well, wouldn't you say?
Yes, you know, really, we are a brainwashed culture. We have been gaslit to believe, and it started in the earliest days, and I do lay this at the feet of patriarchal religion. You know, we have been told that the only idea of God is this, you know, God of the Bible, and it's been destructive for women and men, because men can't really be their authentic selves. You know, they're turned into these authoritative figures who have to deny within themselves the values and essence of the sacred feminine because they think that's weak. And then women, on the other hand, have been taught to obey male authority, to be submissive, to be, you know, restricted, contracted, you know, not to be creative. I mean, some people even think creativity opens you up to the influence of the devil. I mean, just these crazy ideas. And it's really damaged the psyche of humanity. And I think most prevalent today, you know, we've become a traumatized society. And when we're a traumatized society, we elect abusive leaders. And I mean, we can see that if we just, you know, have the courage anymore to even turn on the news. And we've gotten to the point where we are normalizing abuse and exploitation in our society. And that's why I wrote my last book when I was isolated during COVID, to try to help us take the blinders off and raise our awareness that we are enduring abuse to survive. And we have to look at it and do everything we can to reject it and shift things to a better place. But the first step is awareness.
Yeah, so very true. I mean, I'm resonating so very strongly with what you're sharing, and the notion of the most bizarre, the most absurd, the most unnatural things being normalized at the moment in our world is really just, it's overwhelming almost. And it's incredible how easy it seems to be for our society to almost blindfoldedly follow certain trends and avenues that really, as you said earlier, are not for our highest good. I mean, we're seeing it all around the world, and we're seeing it with so many trends within the education system, within the financial system, within the food production system. I mean, it's absolutely mind-blowing what is going on at the moment.
Well, you know, when you think about it, it comes down to a few things that have just warped everything, that have warped the common good. It used to be greed was one of the seven deadly sins. Now greed pervades everything, you know, to the point where, you mentioned food, you know, even oftentimes our food isn't food, you know. We have energy companies telling us, even though they knew decades ago climate change was real, you know, they gaslit society and paid off our politicians for decades so that they could keep, you know, raking in billions while they're destroying the planet. I mean, we have this in so many different, you know, facets of our lives. It's the greed. And also it comes down to is what you're seeing happening, you know, whatever the circumstances, whatever the area of your life, is it about domination and control and power over, or is it about partnership where we try to create win-win situations? And I, you know, in way, way, way too often, it's always about domination and control and power over and greed. And those are the things that too many people, I mean, I know this is obvious, but, you know, I feel like we're a fish swimming in water that no longer sees the water. You know, we are just immersed, saturated, drowning in this exploitation. And we just accept it as normal. We say, well, that's just the way it is. But you know what? It hasn't always been that way. And it can change if enough of us rise up and say enough. You know, like there are protests today in France, in Israel, here in the United States over gun control. People really do have to come out in numbers, I think, to counter these powerful forces that are moneyed, you know, who all they care about is, you know, keeping their wealth and be damned with the health of society or the health of the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And really, I mean, what is behind this is a small number of insanely powerful people who kind of hold the strings behind the scenes on all these systems and structures that we've been talking about, and that we've kind of grown up thinking are safe and have our best interests at heart. Why? What's your take on this, Karen, in terms of why are we so malleable as a society, as a collective? Why is it so easy for us to go down that path where abuse is normalized?
Well, I think we grow up with it. I know growing up in the South, you know, I grew up saturated in racism and white supremacy. And until I left the South, I thought that was just the norm. I thought not just the norm, but I thought that was the way it should be. And then when I got out of that bubble, when that bubble was pierced and I educated myself and I was willing to open my eyes and see the evils of racism, white supremacy, patriarchy, you know, predator capitalism, everything shifted. But it takes that, you know, being exposed to something different, you know, it takes a willingness, I think, to allow yourself to be educated. And I mean, what are we seeing happening in the news right now? You know, Republicans are back to banning books. You know, they don't want people to know about the real history of the United States. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, are we snowflakes? But, You know, the powers that be, they benefit from that ignorance. So, you know, I really do think it might be cliche to say love is the answer. But, you know, if that's a bridge too far, let's say education is the answer. Because I think when people stop just hearing this echo chamber that, you know, we're better than another group of people and, you know, they're subhuman or animals or, you know, women, you know, aren't equal to men or, you know, there's something wrong with gay people or trans people or, you know, we should be able to, you know, capitalism needs an underclass. So it's okay to make that underclass black people and brown people. You know, we have to get to the point where we stop and go, hey, wait a minute. You know, that's not what Jesus taught. You know, maybe if you were a Christian, and maybe go back to the beginning and, you know, be willing to reassess instead of just get in this groupthink, which it is not healthy for oneself or for the world that this hate, you know, actually creates for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And as you were talking there, I was just thinking of how much of the collective is literally feeling numb at the moment, just as a result of, as you said, it comes from very, very early on, from the time that we're born in many ways, and how our exposure to the TV as a programming tool, to social media, also a programming tool in many ways, toxins that we take in from our toiletries, from our cleaning products, from the food that we eat. You said earlier that we don't really even eat food anymore. It's processed stuff that is filled with all kinds of artificial ingredients and hormones and so on. And of course, well, many people might not like what I'm going to say next, but also through vaccines that are often filled with things like aluminum and other kinds of toxins, mercury and so on, and medications as well. We so often take for granted that the medical system is there to support us and the medicines that we take are actually healing us, when I think the reality is that they aren't really healing us. They are keeping us in a certain state that requires us to take those medications for the rest of our lives. So we become dependent on the medical system as well. So yeah, you can tell I'm quite passionate about these topics. So.
Well, you know, I agree with what a lot of what you're saying, you know, because, you know, as the average person, it's hard for us to know who to believe. You know, I mean, I know, for instance, if it hadn't been for the medical establishment, my husband would be dead. Yeah. You know, I mean, when he had a heart attack, it was the medical establishment that saved his life. However, you know, like you mentioned, you know, now he's on a lot of medications for life. And, you know, we don't feel like we are in a position to decide if that's okay or not, you know, because you don't know who to trust. You don't know who to believe. And short of becoming a medical expert yourself and who has the time, you know, we tend to defer to authority or those that are supposed to be more learned. And oftentimes, you know, these people, you know, it depends on what they've been taught as well. So, you know, it becomes, you know, kind of a vicious circle, and it's hard to know what's the right thing to do.
Yeah, you're absolutely right there. And I like your points about the medical system, especially the modern Western medical system, absolutely sometimes being life-saving. And so many people have been, their lives have been saved because they have had access to that system. That's very true.
Yeah, and I mean, I know this is going to sound paranoid, but it would not surprise me in the least if, I don't know, 50 years from now or whenever, we discover that they've known how to cure cancer, you know, but they haven't shared it because it's too lucrative to treat people, you know, in spite of the lives lost. And, you know, and forgive me for that, you know, little vent of paranoia there. But, you know, I could see where a discovery like that could be quashed. Either that, or it would only be the richest among us who could afford the cure, you know? So,
yeah, no, absolutely. And of course, it goes together with the paradigm of suppressing alternate, so-called alternative medicine and natural remedies and all the methods out there that exist that actually do have a massive impact on cancer, but are not really allowed to be in the mainstream knowledge and knowing because of the massive censorship campaigns that the pharmaceutical industry and the medical industry have sufficient amounts of money to launch every time there are these news about traditional medicine, even that has been able to have an impact on different kinds of cancers.
Yeah. And at the same time, we don't know which of these methods might actually work. And if we waste time choosing the wrong alternative medicine, it might cost us our life. So it's, you know, it's really a conundrum.
Yeah, it is a conundrum in many ways. And I think, again, and this relates to the point that you were making about love being really the foundation of the change and the revolution really that we need to have on our planet. But part of that for me is very strongly about really rooting into our bodies and really starting to remember the innate knowledge and knowing that we carry inside ourselves. Our bodies are incredible. We have incredible healing powers within ourselves. And of course, sometimes the Western medical system is needed, but overall our bodies have the ability to heal. Well, I'm not going to say almost anything, but a huge amount of the illnesses and diseases that we are faced with nowadays.
Agreed.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. We've gone on a pretty deep spiral here with all of the topics, but I would love for us to spiral back to the topic of the goddess, if you don't mind, Karen, and for you to share a little bit more about how you found goddess. I know you started to open up this already, but how did you find goddess and why is she in her many different faces and manifestations? Why is she so important in our collective society right now?
Well, the short answer is because she is the, you know, her and her values are the very thing missing that I think that has led the planet and humanity on this path of destruction. You know, I discovered goddess, as I mentioned, you know, earlier, when I moved to California, and I really took a fluff class on goddess, but I was drawn to it. And you know, I can't even remember the content. It wasn't that meaningful in particular, but it opened the door. And suddenly, everywhere I looked, I was seeing, you know, much more relevant and, you know, and ideas and teachings on goddess that had a lot more substance. And it started that way. And like I started to mention earlier, you know, just knowing that there's more than a male face of God, I mean, that changes everything for a woman. You know, it gives her license to understand that, you know, she is equal and, you know, and she, it helps her have better self-esteem and confidence. And, you know, and from there, you know, it's about the values and the ideals that are missing in patriarchy, which is, you know, the rule of men in God and this hierarchy that, you know, anything that's not the male God or man or set up to be in service to men and the male God, you know, and so it's sort of, you know, the sacred feminine sort of obliterates that paradigm of entitled, you know, male superiority, which has led to the toxic masculinity, you know, we have, I think, in society. And also the sacred feminine brings in all the missing elements that patriarchy denies. You know, it brings in the need for justice, equality, intuition, compassion, empathy, you know, peace, all of these things that are in such short supply that keep, this inequity going, in all parts of the world. I mean, if it weren't for, if it wasn't for these patriarchal religions, I don't think that we would be suffering so much from, this white supremacy, from racism, from sexism, from classism. I mean, patriarchy stands on a stool with four legs, and that stool is racism, sexism, environmental exploitation, and capitalism. You know, those are the things that keep it propped up, that keep it going. And those are, the evils of the world when we really stop and think about it. If we could obliterate those things, wouldn't the world be an incredibly different place?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it certainly would be. And something that we can all really reflect on within ourselves and how we might start to do that eradication within our own lives. How would that be possible? What could that look like? Is there anything that we can do even in terms of baby steps to kind of remove ourselves from these four legs or pillars of patriarchy?
Well, I think there are, and some of them are baby steps, but, baby steps are okay. I think to begin with, it starts with a willingness to open our eyes and take the blinders off. And maybe it's not an easy thing, but we have to really examine the beliefs that we grew up with and reassess if they're actually beliefs we want to continue to carry with us and teach our children. So, I think it takes that that personal inner look to begin with, that personal transformation. And if you've decided, women should be equal to men, and we shouldn't have classism, where 400 people in the country have as much wealth as the rest of the people in the country. And, we shouldn't discriminate against Black and brown people because, maybe they have a different skin color or whatever the reasons we were taught when we were young that they were inferior or whatever, we heard when we were growing up. If we say, no, this isn't working, this isn't, this isn't what we want in our world, well, then, once we change ourselves, then we can turn to the outer world. And I think we start changing these ideas in our family. We can start changing these ideas in our community. And, we do that, I think, by standing up and speaking out and speaking truth to these evil ideas that, have such a stranglehold on some of our minds, it maybe will make for an uncomfortable conversation, but the conversation has to be had in order for things to change. If we can start to, maybe pick one group that means the most to you and volunteer with them, because there's so many groups out there that are already working toward helping the world be a better place. Maybe you can volunteer some time. Maybe you can write some postcards. Maybe it's just, who you vote for. Because, let's face it, if we care about the earth, if we care about eradicating sexism and racism, we can't keep voting for Republicans. I mean, it's really just as plain as that. And until we have more than a two-party system, it's the Republicans that want to destroy democracy, that want an authoritative government. They're the ones behind getting rid of a woman's right to her body with Roe v. Wade. They're the ones that are trying to suppress the vote. They're the ones that always support corporations over workers. I mean, I could go on and on and on. You know, Republican presidents got us into wars with countries that weren't even responsible for 9/11. We see what Trump's just done and is still continuing to do. It goes back. Iran-Contra with Reagan, Watergate with Nixon. I mean, there's so many things, so many reasons to open our eyes. And I think sometimes people still vote for Republicans because of the deep-seated, white nationalism and racist upbringing that they have. And coming from the South, I think I speak from, knowing that mentality. So, I mean, even if it's just really think about who you're voting for in the voting booth and find out who your local people are that are running for office. Are they somebody that's trying to get on the school board that wants to ban books and prevent our children from being educated? But if you don't take a few extra moments to figure out who these people are that are going to be making decisions in your community, then, you've sort of abdicated your responsibility as a citizen. So, I mean, these are just some different ways. I think it starts with self-care and self-awareness.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Thank you for sharing all of that. That's super important for everyone to really take in and reflect on, and then really start to take those steps, as you mentioned, towards change, whether it's no matter how small it might be at first, but to really start to change things from the grassroots level up.
That's beautiful. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, do you allow your son to make, what are you teaching your son? Are you teaching him, men have authority over women? It starts in the nursery. You know what I mean? I think, women can really start to shift this in what they teach their sons and daughters about their roles in life as, moving forward as adults.
Mm, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm, no pressure on any parents here. Yeah, no, you're very right. Now, Karen, I could talk to you for hours here, but I know we have to start slowly wrapping up. So I wanted you to just share with our listeners how they could find out more about you and where to buy your amazing book.
Well, thank you. They can find out a lot about me at my new website. It's KarenTate.net. And if you go there, you'll find out about all my books. My latest one is called Normalizing Abuse. And it talks a lot about, how myself, I had to really do a deep dive myself because I was wearing blinders about a lot of the abuse and exploitation that was happening in my own life. And I considered myself a social justice activist, my other books are a lot of them are about goddess ideas and how to perpetuate these ideas out into the world to manifest a new normal. There's one on sacred places of goddess around the world. I would say go to my website, KarenTate.net. I also do a podcast every Wednesday called Voices of the Sacred Feminine. You can find out more about that there as well.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for that, Karen. And we've had quite a conversation here, and I really, really appreciate your insight and the really multi-layered approach you take to these themes. And thank you for everything that you do and all that you are.
Well, thank you very much as well. And for giving me the opportunity to reach your listeners with the message.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much. Oh, and one thing that I forgot to even ask you about, Karen, in the heat of all of this discussion is you have a gift for our listeners as well, isn't it?
Oh, yes, I do. For the first 10 people who reach out to me, and you can do it via my website. If they go to my website and say they heard me here on your show, I will give them a special passcode to be able to see the docufilm I was in called Femme Women Healing the World.
Wonderful. Thank you. I'm going to be the first one to reach out to you about that one. Beautiful.
Thank
well,
you.
Thank you. Thank you, Karen. Really appreciate our time together.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Now, just for a moment, everybody, let's focus our intention and our awareness on this really inspiring and eye-opening energy that's been activated during this conversation. And imagine sending this to everybody and everything on our planet to remember that we are all one. And that the more of us have the courage to step into our sacred feminine power, the more quickly our planet will also be able to heal and ascend. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for being here.